everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, an in-depth look at Hillary Clinton. A look behind the well-crafted, multi-billion-dollar public relations profile. In effect, looking at Clinton through the eyes of those who have been impacted by her, an independent investigative journalist who've written about her, and yet none of this has become common knowledge. You'll know about Clinton from profiles, very positive profiles from major magazines. Today we're going to have a series of audio clips as well as in-depth discussions by individuals such as The Daily Cause, the Private Prison Corporation Stand with Hillary Clinton, from Rick Stangerborn on Op-Ed News, Clinton's Record on Free Trade, National and Global Implications. Let's Talk About Hillary and Saudi Arabia from Media Benjamin and Rebecca Green. Also, The Clinton Syndrome by Simon Head, New York Review of Books, and Steve Zunes, Hillary the Hawk and Her Middle East Policies, and The Clinton Files, Is Hillary a Crook? By Jeffrey St. Clair and Alexander Coburn, among others. These will be interspersed with audio clips. Let's begin. First up, we are all concerned today about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the TTIP, much as many of us were concerned about NAFTA, GATT, CAFTA, and the World Trade Organization. In fact, at the time when her husband and Hillary Clinton as well were promoting the benefits of free trade and why NAFTA would be an enormous boom for American workers, it was difficult to find anyone interested in looking at the downside. What if they were wrong? What if this went sideways? Well, it did. This is what Rick Stangerborn has to say. He is a medical doctor. Given the extraordinary importance of challenging the three major free trade agreements currently being considered, it is remarkable that Democrats have spent so little time discussing the differences between Clinton and Sanders on the issue. While it is perfectly understandable that the corporate media would continue to ignore the explosive consequences of the TPP, TTIP, and the TISA, with a vote on the Trans-Pacific Partnership looming, it is disturbing that more attention has not been paid by voters who would be affected by the massive transfer of government power to international corporations. For those who need reminding, the issues involved preserving national sovereignty, protecting internet freedom, allowing governments to control the devastating consequences of reckless financial thieving by Wall Street, preventing the pharmaceutical industry from gaining even more power to rip off governments and consumers, promoting the interests of Monsanto and other powerful corporations, and much more. The media blockade of information about the negative consequences of free trade has resulted in most Americans being ignorant of the consequences of the neoliberal philosophy of free trade. These policies have been championed by the Clintons and Obama and staunchly opposed by Sanders and, of course, Jill Stein, since Sanders is out of the race, highlighting the difference in their priorities. Established Democrats show allegiance to the transnational corporations that dump money into their campaign bank accounts, while progressives like Jill Stein, are fighting to hold the line against increasing corporate power over the government and the people they are supposed to represent. Clinton's shifts of position on Trans-Pacific Partnership are particularly revealing. After playing a pivotal role in negotiating the secret trade agreement, she began to express doubt about it around the time it became obvious she was preparing to announce her run for presidency. For months, she refused to take a firm position on the issue. Then, in a turnaround that surprised many, but shouldn't have, she stated that she opposed the final product, seemingly learning for the first time that it contained no real protections of American workers from the job losses that all free trade agreements produce. She disavowed her own work. Now, that's what he's saying. However, remember, she had made the same claims about NAFTA. She first was for it. She promoted it. And then when she saw that the political winds were changing, she then said, oh, I was against it from the beginning. That is not true. I might also mention that through Wikipedia, we have found out that Clinton had 44 separate conferences, discussions with European leaders promoting the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now, those were all in secret. She also was privy to everything that was in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So keep this in perspective. From the time she became Secretary of State until today, she has known all along everything that was in it. She had lobbyists and advisors that helped put it together. And yet she now says, oh, why question it? Her questioning it doesn't mean she won't support it if she becomes president. In a heartbeat, she will. So now we're going to hear a clip on Clinton and on Hillary Clinton on NAFTA. It's clip number 3. It's a short clip, but it shows you how this individual will do anything to gain political support.
Clinton helped get NAFTA approved. She held at least 5 meetings to strategize about how to win congressional approval. She helped the White House block opposition from labor and environmental groups, and she was the featured speaker at a crucial meeting. Participants in that event said, quote, her remarks were totally pro-NAFTA. There was no equivocation for her support for NAFTA at the time.
It is not enough just to criticize NAFTA, which I have, and for some years now. I have put forth a very specific plan. Neither of us voted on this. That wasn't something either of us got to cast an independent vote on. I didn't have a public position on it because I was part of the administration.
Oh, I think that everybody is in favor of free and fair trade, and I think that NAFTA is proving its worth.
You wrote about as a real success for your husband. You said it was good on balance for New York and America in 2004, and now you're in Ohio. And your words are much different, Senator. The record is very clear.
Well, I you don't have all the record because you can go back and look at what I've said consistently. And I haven't just said things. If you look at what I have been saying, it has been consistent.
Senator Obama said that you did say in 2004 that on balance NAFTA has been good for New York and America. You did say that. When President Clinton signed this bill, and this was after he negotiated 2 new side agreements for labor and environment, President Clinton said it would be a force for economic growth and social progress. You said in 96 it was proving its worth as free and fair trade. You said that in 2000 it was a good idea that took political courage. So your record is pretty clear.
Was NAFTA a mistake?
NAFTA was a mistake to the extent that it did not deliver on what we had hoped it would.
Keep in mind that she was the primary supporter of NAFTA. She was the one out there talking about how important it was. She's the one who convinced labor unions to go along with it. And then when there was a debate in the last presidential election, the only candidate running on that whole stage out in Ohio was one candidate, Dennis Kucinich, who said he would repeal NAFTA. No one else would. So it shows that she was completely wrong. Now, I think that we should take a careful look at what Hillary Clinton's war record means, because she is, in my personal opinion, the most potentially violent president of the United States we've ever had. We've had a lot of skullduggery. We've had Lyndon Johnson, a pathological liar, a sociopath. We've had Andrew Jackson, who created the Trail of Tears, who was a merciless racist. But I don't believe anyone that's ever entered the White House would be so quick to condemn and go to war. She is a rabid pro-Israel individual. So no matter what Israel does, she will support them. She will give them more money, tens of billions of dollars, even when she and her husband were responsible for taking money and out of the system for the most poor of Americans under our old welfare system. That was her husband and her who gutted that system. So money for war-making countries, money for dictatorships, supplies for dictatorships. She supports Saudi Arabia, which we now know was complicit in the planning and protection of the World Trade Center bombing. That in itself should mean that as of today, Saudi Arabia should be persona non grata, class action lawsuits should be allowed to be filed against it, and all of its assets in the United States should be frozen. It should be held accountable in their international tribunals, in the world court. Clinton won't allow that. She will continue to protect him, as did George Bush and Barack Obama. This is from the Daily Cause. And it says, Hillary Clinton has called tepidly for an end to mass incarceration, but in very vague terms. But also at the same time, she supports Corrections Corporation of America and GEO Group. Both could see their fortunes turning greater if she's elected. And one of the top people for the private prison corporation, and that is Richard Sullivan of the lobbying firm Capital Counsel, is a bundler for the Clinton campaign, bringing in lots of money. And Sullivan is also a registered lobbyist for the GEO Group, a company that operates a number of jails, including immigrant detention centers, for profit. Fully five Clinton bundlers work for the lobbying firm and law firm of Atkin, Gump, Strauss, Hauer, and Feld. Corrections Corporation of America, the largest private prison company in America, paid that group hundreds of thousands of dollars in lobbying fees just last year. The firm also serves as a law firm for the prison giant, representing the company in court. And yet, the head of that firm is a lobbyist for Clinton. Another one, Brian Popper, is also a bundler of big cash from big corporations to the Clinton Foundation. So Hillary Clinton has a complicated history of incarceration. Mainly, it's her and her husband who said, get tough on crime. Quote, we need more police, we need more and tougher prison sentences for repeat offenders. The three strikes and you're out. And her husband and her did that. She's the one who called African Americans, Latinos, terrible derogatory names that could, by no imagination, could anyone say they were not racist today as these predators, and they should be brought to heel. And that's exactly what happened. Today, because of Bill and Hillary Clinton, the math is simple. More than 20 million individuals and families have been directly impacted by members of their families going to jail and long sentences. And also, while her husband has been widely challenged as a major drug user by multiple individuals in Arkansas, and any journalist who wants to know about the Clinton's use, or Bill Clinton's use and his brother, of drugs, all they have to do is go to Arkansas. It's an open secret. There are a lot of people willing to talk who did drugs with him, and also including state troopers who will tell you that they brought money to the Clinton, to Bill Clinton, when he was governor, in envelopes from Mena, Arkansas, which was the number one place where drugs were coming in the United States. And yet they made the laws that would put other people using marijuana in nonviolent offenses in prison for a long time. Seems to be a double standard here. And also, there is an important story about when Bill Clinton was a student, he spied on Americans abroad for the CIA. And no one has brought that up. But they should, because it's important that we know everything about this couple, and we don't. Now, in addition to that, take a look at Saudi Arabia. Now, by any stretch of the imagination, if you wanted to truly stop, or at least make an effort at stopping ISIS, ISIL, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, you would have to go to where they're concentrated. You have to go to where their organization exists, where their planning, the finances, and all that occur. The training and where they're supplied arms is a different place. That's Saudi Arabia, and that's Turkey and Qatar. Now, in Saudi Arabia, they have the most radical form of Islam, and that is Wahhabism. And there is an association between the Wahhabists running Saudi Arabia as a form of joint theocracy. All the religious madrasas, all the religious schools, They teach the most severe form of Wahhabism, and the royal family is allowed to exist, to stay alive, because they promote it and allow it. There are no freedom of religion. There's only one religion allowed in Saudi Arabia. You won't find any Christian church. You won't find any other type of religion. And even other Islamic believers, such as in Sunni, in the Shia, are constantly put upon and attacked. And their leading cleric was recently executed. They do more beheadings than any other religious group in the world. And in fact, they're running neck and neck with ISIS in beheadings and crucifixions and stoning women. And they have all forms of police to make sure that women are not outside with any man except a person in their first immediate family, not allowed to drive. And so this is what Hillary supports and did so, and she accepted personal gifts from them. So how in the world can Hillary call herself a feminist and support countries that abuse women, provide them with no freedoms, support freedom of speech in countries that have no freedom of speech, support constitutional guarantees, freedom of assembly, where you have no freedoms of assembly in any of these Middle Eastern nations? And if you do, you're targeted, arrested, jailed, or killed. And at the top of the list of the most terror-based nation in the world is Saudi Arabia. So why not do the following? Why not cut off all relations with Saudi Arabia? Don't buy its oil. We don't need it. And don't sell it any more arms. Also, why not stop Turkey, that's run by a modern-day Hitler, by not allowing any incursion from Turkey into Syria and into Iraq, where they've been stealing the oil, bringing it back into Syria, bringing back into Turkey, and then selling it to Israel and other countries in the black market, making hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars in profit for the people, the family that run Turkey. But Turkey and Saudi Arabia are cooperating on this. So both countries arm, train, protect the terrorists. And we know this. Not once did the Obama administration and the National Security Agency and the CIA and the Defense Department blow up the 13,000 oil tankers going from Turkey into Syria, stealing Syrian oil and bringing it back, or into Iraq and bringing it back. They knew it, and they did nothing to stop it. Also, the United States has been a major supporter of ISIS. And even John McCain, foolishly, does he do anything but foolish things, went over to promote the moderate terrorists in Syria. And one of the people standing right behind him in the photo op is one of the leaders of one of the largest terrorist organizations in Syria. Hillary Clinton has supported all of this, including covering up the truth about Benghazi. And she lied about Benghazi, as did everyone else, because if they had to tell the truth, they would have said, yes, Benghazi's mission was used as a place to get weapons from Gaddafi, who she was responsible as the leading proponent of destroying Gaddafi and his country, bringing his enormous arsenal weapons and transferring it through Benghazi's CIA safe house into Syria. That would have been the truth. Well, that would have broken several international laws. In effect, that would put them right up there as war criminals. So everyone lied. So everything they told us about Benghazi was a lie, because they couldn't afford the truth to get out. This is what Media Benjamin has to say about Clinton and Saudi Arabia. Quote, as Hillary Clinton emerges as the front runner for the Democratic Party's presidential candidate, she's receiving increasing scrutiny for her years as Secretary of State. Many are criticizing her hawkish foreign policy, which is the best indication of what Hillary Clinton's foreign policy would be, with many focusing on her long relationship with Saudi Arabia. On Christmas Eve 2011, Hillary Clinton and her closest aides celebrated a $29 billion sale of over 80 F-15 fighter jets, manufactured by U.S.-based Boeing Corporation, to Saudi Arabia. In a chain of enthusiastic emails, an aide exclaimed that it was, quote, not a bad Christmas present. These are the very fighter jets the Saudis have been using to intervene in the internal affairs of Yemen since March 2015. A year later, at least 2,800 Yemeni civilians have been killed, mostly by airstrikes, and there is no end in sight. The indiscriminate Saudi strikes have killed journalists and ambulance drivers. They have hit the Chamber of Commerce, facilities supported by Doctors Without Borders, a wedding hall, a center for the blind. The attacks have also targeted ancient heritage sites in Yemen. International human rights organizations are saying that the Saudi-led strikes on Yemen may amount to war crimes. During her tenure as Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton made weapons transfers to the Saudi government a, quote, top priority, according to a new report published in The Intercept. While Clinton's State Department was deeply invested in getting weapons to Saudi Arabia, the Clinton Foundation accepted millions of dollars in donations from both the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the weapons manufacturer Boeing. Christmas presents were being gifted all around. Despite the brutal attacks on Yemen and egregious domestic human rights violations, Saudi Arabia remains the number one U.S. ally in the Arab world. And while the original U.S. interest was to secure Saudi's vast oil fields, today only 10% of oil used in the United States comes from the kingdom. U.S. dependence on Saudi oil has been superseded by U.S. dependence on weapons sales. The most recent Saudi weapons deal was made in November 2015, a deal worth $1.29 billion that included 22,000 smart and general-purpose bombs and over 5,000 Joint Direct Attack munitions kits to convert orbital bombs into precision-guided weapons using GPS signals. The Pentagon's Defense Security Cooperative Agency justifies the sale, saying, quote, they help sustain stronger military-to-military relationships between the United States and Saudi Arabia, end quote. It's hard to exaggerate the enormity and high-tech nature of Saudi weapons purchases. And it goes back to how much have we actually sold Saudi Arabia? $97 billion in weapons. And they are using those weapons to fight the weakest, most impoverished country in the Middle East, Yemen. And we have not said a thing. But it gets worse. And this is from Glenn Greenwald from The Intercept, an article entitled, Hillary Clinton Goes to Militaristic Hawkish Think Tank, Gives Militaristic Hawkish Speech. Quote, leading Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton this morning delivered a foreign policy speech at the Brookings Institute. By itself, the choice of venue was revealing. Brookings served as ground zero for centrist think tank advocacy of the Iraq War, which Clinton, along with Joe Biden, notoriously and vehemently advocated. Brookings' two leading scholar stars, Kenneth Pollack and Michael Hanlon, spent all of 2002 and 2003 insisting that invading Iraq was wise and just, and spent the years after that assuring Americans that the victorious war and subsequent occupation were going very well. In fact, in 2003, Hannon debated with himself over whether the strategy that led to the victory in his beloved war should be deemed brilliant or just clever. And this is what he wrote in the New York Times. Quote, since then, O'Hannon in particular has advocated for increased military force in more countries than one can count. That's not surprising. Brookings is funded in part by one of the Democratic Party's favorite billionaires, Haim Saban, who is a dual citizen of the United States and Israel, and once said of himself, quote, I'm the one-issue guy, and my issue is Israel. Pollack advocated for the attack of Iraq while he was director of research for the Saban Center for Middle East Policy. Saban became the Democratic Party's largest fundraiser, even paying $7 million for the new DNC building, and is now a very substantial funder of Hillary Clinton's campaign. In exchange, she's written a personal letter to him publicly, quote, expressing her strong and unequivocal support for Israel in the face of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, end quote. So the hawkish Brookings is the prism through which Hillary Clinton's foreign policy worldview can best be understood. The think tank is filled with former advisors to both Bill and Hillary Clinton and would certainly provide numerous top-level foreign policy officials in any Hillary Clinton administration. As she put it today, at the start, quote, there are a lot of longtime friends and colleagues who perch here at Brookings. And she proceeded to deliver exactly the speech one would expect, reminding everyone of just how militaristic and hawkish she is. The context of her speech was the Iran deal, which Clinton was now going to challenge. It would be virtually impossible for her not to do so. So that is the Clinton, the militarist, the Clinton, the warmonger, the Clinton. She never met a Middle Eastern dictator that she wasn't able to find some way of working with. Now, let us hear this about why Hillary's war record matters.
Hillary Clinton wants to be commander-in-chief, and she has more foreign policy experience than anyone running for president. She even brags about it when she can.
Yeah, I was very flattered when Henry Kissinger said I ran the State Department better than anybody had run it in a long time.
But she might not want to name drop a guy who orchestrated coups, propped up dictators, and probably violated international law. And experience isn't the same thing as success. What's Clinton's track record when it comes to U.S. intervention abroad, and why does it matter? Everyone knows that back in 2002, Senator Clinton voted for the invasion of Iraq. Even though she now admits that it was a mistake, has she learned from it? Well, her actions at the State Department are telling. Let's start with the bombing of Libya during the Arab Spring. Clinton was the Obama administration's most influential advocate in toppling the Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Using flawed intelligence from Libyan opposition leaders, she pressured President Obama to join coalition forces, despite resistance from members of his cabinet. Following the death of Gaddafi, NATO bombing ended, but Clinton had no strategy for securing the country after his overthrow. The chaos that followed, free-flowing weapons and armed militias, have turned Libya into a country with competing governments, no rule of law, and a growing ISIS presence. Still, the former Secretary of State seems to be proud of her role in regime change in Libya.
Libya actually held elections. They elected moderates. They have tried to piece together a government against a lot of really serious challenges.
But Libya isn't the only case of Clinton's militaristic approach. Whenever the Obama administration was divided about using force, Clinton was on team intervention. She repeatedly advocated for the 2009 decision to send thousands of troops to continue the war in Afghanistan. Vice President Joe Biden and others opposed it. But even after leaving the State Department, Clinton has been vocal in her readiness to take on conflict around the world. When it comes to Iran, Clinton's publicly supported diplomacy and the deal. But at a time when the U.S. is dropping sanctions, Clinton says there should be new ones.
Which is really a very retrograde posture, something that's not shared by pretty much anyone within the Democratic Party.
On Syria, Clinton's distanced herself from Obama. She's called for a more aggressive approach, including a no-fly zone, more airstrikes, more special ops, and
ground forces actually taking back more territory from ISIS.
Then there's Latin America. Clinton's record points to leadership that talks a big game on democracy, but behind the scenes isn't all that interested in it. In 2009, she condoned a coup in Honduras, even though the United Nations and others condemned it. Clinton secretly negotiated with coup leaders to ensure fast elections and that the former president would not return. Since then, Honduras has been rife with drug violence and police corruption. It has the highest homicide rate in the world, which is part of the reason so many migrants have become U.S. asylum seekers. Given all that, who's Clinton hoping to attract with this record?
It's very difficult to perceive who within the Democratic primary electorate she's trying to woo over with an extremely hostile and antagonistic foreign policy.
So, is Hillary the commander-in-chief the Democrats want and that America really needs?
No. Hillary Clinton has a lot of people, mainly women, and a lot of African-American and Latina women supporting her. Do they know the truth about how much this woman lies? We're going to play you 13 minutes straight of Hillary Clinton lying, being called out on it. You can hear for yourself. And what would happen if you were caught lying, or someone you respected were caught lying over and over and over again on every single issue you discussed? Not just a difference of opinion, not just making a subtle mistake, but consciously lying. Let's hear now 13 minutes of Hillary Clinton lying.
You are against same-sex marriage. Now you're for it. You defended President Obama's immigration policies. Now you say they're too harsh. You supported his trade deal dozens of times. You even called it the gold standard. Now, suddenly, last week, you're against it. Will you say anything to get elected?
Well, actually, I have been very consistent over the course of my entire life. I have always fought for the same values and principles.
Do you think New York State should recognize gay marriage?
No.
No. Okay.
I believe that marriage is not just a bond, but a sacred bond between a man and a woman.
I have not supported same-sex marriage. I have supported civil partnerships and contractual relationships.
I support marriage for lesbian and gay couples. I support it personally and as a matter of policy and law.
So you're saying your opinion on gay marriage changed, or you changed your mind?
I have to say, I think you are being very persistent, but you are playing with my words and playing with what is such an
important
issue.
I'm just trying to clarify so I can understand.
No, I don't think you are trying to clarify. I think you're trying to say that, you know, I used to be opposed and now I'm in favor and I did it for political reasons. And that's just flat wrong. So let me just state what I feel like you are implying and repudiate it. I have a strong record. I have a great commitment to this issue, and I am proud of what I've done and the progress we're making.
Yeah, I'm saying, I'm sorry, I just want to clarify what I was saying. No, I was saying that you maybe really believed this all along, but, you know, believed in gay marriage all along, but felt for political reasons America wasn't ready yet and you couldn't say it. That's what I was thinking.
No, that is not true.
It really is great how long you've supported gay marriage.
Yes. I could have supported it sooner.
Well, you did it pretty soon.
Yeah. Could have been sooner.
Fair point.
Just in July, New Hampshire, you told the crowd you, quote, take a backseat to no one when it comes to progressive values.
I take a backseat to no one when you look at my record and standing up and fighting for progressive values.
Last month in Ohio, you said you plead guilty to, quote, being kind of moderate and center. Do you change your political identity based on who you're talking to?
No. I think that, like most people that I know, I have a range of views, but they are rooted in my values and my experience.
You know, I get accused of being kind of moderate and center. I plead guilty.
Just for the record, are you a progressive or are you a moderate?
I'm a progressive.
Going through the emails, there were over 60,000 in total sent and received. About half were work-related and went to the State Department, and about half were personal, that were not in any way related to my work.
When you speak to the public, you say, I turned over everything. That's, for the most part, a direct quote. When you talk to the public, you say, I turned over everything.
90 to 95% of my work-related emails were in the state system. If they wanted to see them, they would certainly have been able to do so.
You know what? That is maybe the 10th time you have cited that figure today.
It is.
And I have not heard anyone other than you ever cite that figure. Who told you that 90 to 95% of your emails were in the State Department system? Who told you that?
We learned that from the State Department in their analysis of the emails that were already on the system.
The Inspector General report found that less than 1% of State Department emails, record emails, were captured. So they give a number of less than 1%, and you give a number of 90%.
I have absolute confidence that everything that could be in any way connected to work is now in the possession of the State Department.
This pile represents the emails that you sent or received about Libya in 2011, from February through December of 2011. This pile represents the emails you sent or received from early 2012 until the day of the attack. There are 795 emails in this pile. We've counted them. There are 67 emails in this pile in 2012. And I'm troubled by what I see here. I can only conclude by your own records that there was a lack of interest in Libya in 2012.
The server contains personal communications from my husband and me.
Only time I got on the internet, I did two emails, and I ordered Christmas presents from a reservation. Otherwise, I found people said embarrassing things on emails. I didn't want to be one of them.
I mean, and how many angels dance on the head of a pin? I have really nothing to, how do you answer that?
I represented Wall Street as a senator from New York, and I went to Wall Street in December of 2007, before the big crash that we had. And I basically said, cut it out. Quit foreclosing on homes. Quit engaging in these kinds of speculative behaviors.
Now, who's exactly to blame for the housing crisis? I think there's plenty of blame to go around. Home buyers who paid extra fees to avoid documenting their income should have known they were getting in over their heads.
Of course, we have to deal with the problem that the banks are still too big to fail. We can never let the American taxpayer and middle-class families ever have to bail out the kind of speculative behavior that we saw. But we also have to worry about some of the other players. AIG, a big insurance company. Lehman Brothers, an investment bank. There's this whole area called shadow banking. That's where the experts tell me the next potential problem could come from. So I'm with both Senator Sanders and Governor O'Malley in putting a lot of attention onto the banks. And the plan that I have put forward would actually empower regulators to break up big banks. I represented New York, and I represented New York on 9/11. When we were attacked, where were we attacked? We were attacked in downtown Manhattan, where Wall Street is. I did spend a whole lot of time and effort helping them rebuild. That was good for New York. It was good for the economy. And it was a way to rebuke the terrorists who had attacked our country.
9/11 was bad.
I agree with that.
Time and time again, you hear one thing in speeches, and then you see a campaign that has the worst kind of tactics, reminiscent of the same sort of Republican attacks on Democrats. Well, I am here to say that it is not only wrong, but it is undermining core Democratic principles. Since when do Democrats attack one another on universal health care?
I've looked at the legislation that Senator Sanders has proposed, and basically he does eliminate the Affordable Care Act, eliminates private insurance, eliminates Medicare, eliminates Medicaid, TRICARE, Children's Health Insurance Program.
Just because Senator Obama chose not to present a universal health care plan does not give him the right to attack me because I did. So let's have a real campaign. Enough with the speeches and the big rallies and then using tactics that are right out of Karl Rove's playbook. This is wrong, and every Democrat should be outraged.
The Democratic Party in the United States worked since Harry Truman to get the Affordable Care Act passed.
So shame on you, Barack Obama. It is time you ran a campaign consistent with your messages in public.
Hillary Clinton's attempt to tout her foreign policy experience hounded her again on the campaign trail today.
I made a mistake in describing it.
She claimed she misspoke last week and was sleep deprived when she described landing under sniper fire in Tuzla, Bosnia, something that didn't happen. But CBS News has found several times in the past few months when Senator Clinton used the Bosnia trip to try to show her international experience. December in Iowa.
You know, we landed in one of those corkscrew landings and ran out because they said there might be sniper fire. I don't remember anybody offering me tea on the tarmac when that was happening.
Then in February.
The welcoming ceremony had to be moved inside because of sniper fire.
And last week.
I remember landing under sniper fire. We basically were told to run to our cars. Now that is what happened.
Differing accounts of your trip to Bosnia, and I'm wondering if you can clarify. I know you recall, ducking under sniper fire, and Sinbad, in his account, who's on the trip, he said that the most dangerous part was remembering where he was going to eat next.
He's a comedian, you know, Jeff.
Say it.
He's a comedian.
So you actually recall, hearing gunfire, and were you...
When we were flying into Bosnia, we came in a evasive maneuver. There was no greeting ceremony.
And we basically were told to run to our cars. Now, that is what happened.
After CBS News video showed what really happened when she landed and greeted officials, Senator Clinton maintained there were risks, but explained to the Philadelphia Daily News why she was seen on the Bosnian tarmac greeting a young child if it was really so dangerous.
I was also told that the greeting ceremony had been moved away from the tarmac, but that there was this 8-year-old girl. And I said, well, I can't rush by her. I've got to at least greet her. So I greeted her, I took her stuff, and I left. Now that's my memory of it.
Good to see you.
Once again, her memory doesn't match our videotape. She and her daughter Chelsea lingered on the tarmac to greet U.S. military officials, took photos. There was the group of 7th graders on the tarmac, too. And then Senator Clinton walked to the armored vehicle where she did eventually duck and enter.
It was one of the highlights of President Clinton's first term, passage of the North American Free Trade Agreement, also known as NAFTA. Critics blame NAFTA for the loss of manufacturing jobs in industrial states, including Ohio and Pennsylvania. Hillary Clinton helped get NAFTA approved. She held at least 5 meetings to strategize about how to win congressional approval. She helped the White House block opposition from labor and environmental groups. And she was the featured speaker at a crucial meeting. Participants in that event said, quote, her remarks were totally pro-NAFTA. There was no equivocation for her support for NAFTA at the time.
You know, I have been a critic of NAFTA from the very beginning.
My concerns about NAFTA expressed years ago have been well documented and verified.
I didn't have a public position on it.
I have spoken consistently against NAFTA.
And if you look at what I have been saying, it has been consistent.
I have been consistent.
You can go back and look at from the very beginning.
I was one of the voices in the administration warning about NAFTA.
You said it was good on balance for New York and America in 2004. And now you're in Ohio, and your words are much different, Senator. The record is very clear.
Well, I you don't have all the records, because you can go back and look at what I've said consistently.
Oh, I think that everybody is in favor of free and fair trade, and I think that NAFTA is proving its worth.
I think on balance, NAFTA has been good for New York and America.
Was NAFTA a mistake?
NAFTA was a mistake to the extent that it did not deliver on what we had hoped it would.
Your opponents are saying that that's really part of a larger pattern with you, that you often avoid taking firm positions on controversial issues.
13 minutes of Hillary Clinton lying. Just remember, for those of you who still think that she would be better than the devil you don't know, keep in mind, here's the likely outcome. Supporting Israel's cyber attacks against Iran, followed by military intervention against Iran. She would definitely support Saudi Arabia and Turkey being more aggressive in Syria, and they would end up turning Syria over to terrorist front groups as long as they support their radical form of Islam. She would posture NATO against Russia and also against China. So what do you think the likely outcome would be for someone who's supporting a Cold War, a World War III, who would support an increase in the proliferation of nuclear weapons, an additional $1 trillion worth to $1.5 trillion, who would continue to increase spying against Americans, looking at any form of political or economic dissent as a form of domestic terrorism, putting people on additional watch lists and being even more aggressive against them, and also supporting Wall Street. She has made over, her and her husband made more than $16 million giving short lectures on Wall Street. If you understand Wall Street, it's very difficult to get an audience on Wall Street. But when you have the power that a president has, then you have to understand why they're willing to give her and her husband these large amounts of money. Also, what does it say when she has created, and this is a matter of historical record, she created a group of people, I think it was called the Bimbo Squad, that were going after any of the women that her husband had affairs with. She would have to have an army for that, because Bill Clinton admitted to a lawyer, a woman lawyer, that he had had a 10-year affair with, including when she was seeing Bill, but Bill was married to Hillary back in Arkansas, that Bill bragged that he had 3,000 different lovers up to that point. This is when he was still in Arkansas as Attorney General. How many since then, we have no idea of knowing. So instead of getting rid of the husband by divorcing him, she not only stays with him, but uses it as a way of maintaining her own political power structure. And that means attacking the women who themselves have been victims, many claiming they were raped. So where are the Democrats, where are the feminists within the Democratic establishment interviewing the alleged victims from Bill Clinton and supporting their efforts at redress, as people are supporting the victims of Bill Cosby's taking advantage of the women with drugs or alcohol? So there's a double standard. But this is what you're getting. You see, if you understand Washington, you understand that you have about 5,000 permanent technocrats. These are bright individuals, outstanding pedigrees, good universities, and they're all politically, economically, or ideologically connected. And they are constantly moving. They'll move from the FDA to Monsanto or back again. They'll move from a pharmaceutical company to the CDC and back again. They'll move from a major white shoe law firm back into the Justice Department and then back to a law firm, and always making more money, because once you're in one of these governmental agencies as a policymaker, not as a bureaucrat, then you take back the ability to go back in at any time, because you've created friends and associates, you've hired people that will be the what are called the stay-behinds. Now, every president has anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 or more stay-behinds. And Clinton, with her 8 years in the White House and her years as Secretary of State, they have thousands upon thousands of stay-behinds. These are the people then also are lobbyists for major industrial corporations, agricultural corporations, banking and finance corporations, energy cartel corporations, medical corporations. And those people benefit when they want to have their laws written and supported by someone that is in the White House, hence the big lecture fees, giving money to the Clinton Foundation. That's what you're getting. You're getting people who will be the most abusive people in the history of America in power. Now, mind you, you're not just dealing with the Clintons at that point. And do you think Bill Clinton's going to change his ways? No, he will not. So you're going to have the kind of moral debauchery that the most powerful people in the world should not be associated with. What a person does with their sex life is their business. It's not ours. What they do in our name is our business. What they do against our will and our needs is our business. So how in the world can we consistently vote into office at all levels some of the most reprehensibly vile human beings? Because spiritually minded people would never get elected to anything in America. We look for the top alpha male and female. The women who seek these offices are frequently brutal. Margaret Thatcher is one good example, and there are many others like her. Jean Kilpatrick at the UN, Madeleine Albright. So these are not the spiritual feminists. So we should consider that. Finally today, we have another clip on Hillary Clinton, two more short ones. I'd like you to hear them now.
Clinton emails out this morning is raising questions about a donor to the Clinton Foundation and how he ended up on a government intelligence advisory board. ABC's Brian Ross is here with more on that story. Good morning, Brian.
Well, good morning, Amy. The newly released State Department emails being made public here this morning reveal how Undersecretary of State Hillary Clinton, a major donor to the Clinton Foundation, was put on a sensitive government security advisory board, even though he had no known experience in the area. Members of the State Department's International Security Advisory Board include some of the country's most prominent figures on American nuclear strategy, all with top-secret clearances. But in 2011, the Clinton State Department also added this man, Rajiv Fernando, a wealthy Chicago commodities broker with no known connection to the national security world.
I'd like to invite to the stage Raj Fernando.
What he was known for before and after his appointment was raising and giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to Democratic campaigns and as much as $250,000 to the Clinton Foundation.
ABC News, you have just a second to talk here.
When we approached Fernando at the 2012 Democratic Convention...
How did you get appointed to that board? Can you talk about that?
How did you know my name, out of curiosity?
He became upset, and we were threatened with arrest.
Yeah, just me betting the property will be arrested.
I'll be arrested for asking questions of this man?
But now the new set of State Department emails, obtained after a lawsuit brought by Citizens United, reveals the role of Clinton Chief of Staff Cheryl Mills in appointing the big donor, with a senior career official using the shorthand S, a common reference to Secretary Clinton. The true answer is simply that S staff, Cheryl Mills, added him. Raj was not on the list sent to S. He was added at their insistence.
I don't know who will be giving money.
At her confirmation hearing, Clinton vowed foundation donors would not receive special treatment.
That will not influence. It will not be in the atmosphere.
The new Clinton emails also show that when ABC began asking questions about the appointment of Fernando in 2011, top Clinton aide Cheryl Mills asked the press officer to stall for 24 hours. The very next day, Fernando submitted his resignation from the prestigious board. The Clinton campaign declined to comment on our story, and the State Department said it's not unusual for the Secretary's chief of staff to play a role. As for Fernando, he has continued to raise big dollars for the Clinton campaign and has given more than $1 million to the Clinton Foundation. In fact, he'll be one of her superdelegates at next month's convention, Amy.
And Brian, this morning there is another new report about Hillary's emails on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, linking them to some potentially sensitive messages about drone strikes overseas.
That's right. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that the ongoing FBI investigation is focusing on these messages sent by American diplomats in Pakistan about pending drone attacks, which ended up on her personal email server. But the journal also says the messages were vaguely worded and did not use the terms CIA or drone. ABC News has not been able to independently confirm the journal's report, Amy.
All right, Brian Ross, thank you.
And we'll be completing today's program with one final short audio clip on Hillary Clinton.
For years, Hillary Clinton and President Obama have blamed the deaths of four Americans in Benghazi on a YouTube video that incited out-of-control protesters.
Some have sought to justify this vicious behavior along with the protest that took place at our embassy in Cairo yesterday as a response to inflammatory material posted on the Internet.
The natural protests that arose because of the outrage over the video were used as an excuse by extremists.
Brand new evidence from Hillary's own email prove that was a lie. There were no protests.
If there's no evidence for a video-inspired protest, then where'd the false narrative start? It started with you, Madam Secretary. But what troubles me more is I think you knew the truth. Within 24 hours, you had a conversation with the Egyptian Prime Minister. You told him this: we know the attack in Libya had nothing to do with the film. It was a planned attack, not a protest. Let me read that one more time. We know, not we think, not it might be, we know the attack in Libya had nothing to do with the film. It was a planned attack, not a protest. State Department experts knew the truth. You knew the truth. But that's not what the American people got.
Kelly then voiced what millions of Americans feel towards Mrs. Clinton and the administration.
This is what drives people crazy. It drives them crazy. You know, why not just come out and lay it out? This is what makes people distrust not just these politicians, but Washington, but the administration, but anybody who even raises their hand and testifies under oath, believing you're not being straight with me.
Can Mrs. Clinton ever be trusted again? Will she be prosecuted for her involvement in Benghazi? Share and comment below.
And that's our program. A different look at Hillary Clinton, one not based upon the special association that the mainstream media has with the Clinton dynasty. I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Thank you for listening.
Time again, this time I'm gonna win. But another fight, things ain't right, I'm losing again.